All right, that's wonderful. I'll tell you what, this, it went like that through five.
Joe McGinnis.
Joe McGinnis, back to his home number, he's been a bona fide 38, retired now. He's been a lot of years and knows all angles. And has a good feeling for the historical work.
And he knows about the AA.
Yeah.
GCC. Who does Jenny have his phone number?
Yeah. But you should think this over and really handle it. They're incapable.
Well, you said there are Archives Committee. It was chaired by some retired guy from DuPont. I don't know what's up.
There's a new fellow in charge, and what the key guy is the technical manager, like you are at the center. He's the manager of the ADC. They have a big headquarters. Research Prime in North Carolina. Very lovely. In fact, I was a speaker at the dedication of the building. We put a time capsule with all sorts of special historical things in it at the time. And I made the talk and the dedicated the thing. Big celebration.
When was that approximately?
Oh, it must be 20 years ago.
Looking for my briefcase.
Jenny can give you a good bunch of write-ups, articles, booklets, and things. Thing.
I've used it. My company is known for that, and it burnt other people up because competitors, for example, never got publicity that I got or we got. And when the journals, others would say, well, you write the same thing with publishing, they couldn't do it.
When do you, the company you date from 45, or it's really incorporated in 45.
Yeah,
you won't be, you're within shouting distance of your 50th anniversary.
Well, we're in our 42nd year, yeah.
Okay, are we recording?
Yeah.
All right, you tell me what you want to know, how you want me to tell you, and I'm pretty...
Well, are you on the tape or are we...
Go ahead.
Well, we'll talk for just a minute first, but you're picking it up.
Yeah.
Basically, Sydney, we'd like you just to talk, and I will try to ask you some leading questions and to chip in with questions to keep the conversation moving along.
What is it you want to know?
What we want to know is a variety of these things that don't appear in the... in the Vita as such, that is, that have to do with two different sorts of things. Things with start, for instance, about your family background. Things of the context of decisions and events. And things about the people, the flavour of the times. The sorts of things, in other words, that you're not likely to get out of the written sources. That the eventual product of all of this will be a 50 to 100 page transcript that will have its own table of contents, have an abstract, have an index. It will read like a scholarly article, and it will be about those things within your own historical experience that a historian, someone in the future, may be interested in and would really have liked to have asked
but
you
you're
about.
Listening, you're interesting in anecdotes, right?
In things that capture the flavor and the texture.
For example, are you interested, do you remember the remarks I made about the history of science? Are you interested, remember with the different heads of the whole thing, how all these people are dead, and the story, and how they came through, and what they're—I don't know. There are many things.
Yes.
You want to stick to just chemistry, or to broader other things?
No, we want to organize essentially around your own career, and essentially as it relates to
chemistry,
to the history of science, and to those out into those philanthropic interests and so on.
That aren't the history of science, the technical thing, the interest in developments of these things.
Yes, the industrial. That's the industrial side. Yes, the patents and the...
All right, kind of what was happening in the... All right, I think I can give you a pretty good story or whatever.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are we ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. This is an oral history interview with Sydney Edelstein taking place on Monday, 31 August, with Arnold Thackray and Geoffrey Sturcio from the Centre for History of Chemistry. Sydney, can you start by telling us a little bit about your family and their background in Chattanooga?
Very simple. My father was born in New York. His father and mother immigrated to Chattanooga when he was 3 years old. This is sometime approximately around 1890, more or less, because I was born in 1912 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and that means my father was about 20 years old, more or less, at the time, so it would have been 1890, 92, etc. His father was an immigrant from Lithuania, came over. At the time, the big Jewish immigration from Russia and Poland, etc. He came over as a man not knowing the language, ignorant. He was given the name, family name was not Edelstein, but the family name was something like Hode, H-O-D-E or H-O-D-E-S. And at the immigration in New York, as typical with the impatience of immigration officers, they didn't quite get the name, and he told my grandfather, take a good American name, Edelstein, somebody else that had Edelstein. So that's how we became Edelstein. That's the name of the family that came down. No meaning, no relationship to the original name, which again was a simple, short name. My mother's family. My mother was born in St. Louis, probably also in the 1890s, and her father was a similar mother, similar type of immigrants also from a certain area in Lithuania. They moved to Knoxville, Tennessee when she was a young girl, and then married my father in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I was born in Chattanooga in 1912. The firstborn of a fairly large family on many, many sides. And of course, as the firstborn, I was expected to be special, which I wasn't. We gotta stop it. I gotta ask for information here. How much more do you want?
This is good. What was your father doing in China?
My father graduated the third year of grammar school, and then the poor family sold newspapers, etc. Inherently, he was a smart businessman and an entrepreneur, and he opened a store, and he opened a pawn shop, and he was a big pawnbroker of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Basically, his family had no special line of education or anything. They were just ordinary poor people. On my mother's side, it's a little different story. There is a record of technical expertise, engineers and whatnot, going back into Russia for a number of generations, at least as I know by hearsay. Her brothers all became, my mother's brothers, became well-known engineers. One was the inventor of many new things in the field of movies. For example, the techniques that were used in those days in the bouncing ball, which was a way of synchronizing things together. He developed the idea, stereoscopic movies that were first used way back, many, many other principles in the movie industry, and he was a well-known inventor in the field of optics, many patents, many things. I'm going back into the 20s. Other brothers were well-known engineers that built the big airport here in New Orleans and many, many other things at the time. So they were tradition on that side of technical interest, etc. And furthermore, the chemical side, my mother was a very famous cook in Tennessee and was known all over the South as a creative cook, an ability to develop recipes for every type, from European to everything, and well known from that standpoint. So my cookbook chemistry, I think, came from that side.
Where did you go to school, and when did you go to the Baylor?
I went in Chattanooga. I went to the grammar school through the fourth grade. And apparently, I was both a precocious and a troublemaking child. And there was a well-known prep school outside of Chattanooga. And some people suggested to my parents that the only thing that would be useful in keeping me from going to hell would be to send me to this prep school, which was Baylor School. At that time, I entered the school in 1921, And fifth grade, I should have gone to the fifth grade. They didn't have a fifth grade, so I went to the sixth grade. I was the only Jewish student at the time in this school, which was a very considered a fine school, basically a school of the Episcopal Church. I mean, that was the atmosphere at the school. You want more about the school?
Let me just ask
you what you want
about the your family there and being Jewish, and was your family religiously devout? How much of an issue was this?
Well,
when?
My family was very interesting. My father was an uneducated person, but a bright man. My mother was an educated person. In those days, see, a high school graduate was like getting a PhD a day, almost. And she, two things. She was a very liberal, forward-looking person. She believed in the new ideas of Reform Judaism. My father was brought up in the regular Orthodox Jewish outlook. My mother believed in Reform Judaism, which was a breakaway from the rigid things. Furthermore, she was another screwball. She was an ardent Zionist back in the, going back as a young girl in 1910. And so I grew up in what was a very mixed, peculiar kind of thing. I was forced to go to the Orthodox setup and study the things, and to be bar mitzvah at the age of 13, an Orthodox thing. At the same time, I was also went to the Reform movement, which was more like a, I would say, an Episcopal church than it was like a Jewish thing. So I grew up in both. And incidentally, this is very interesting. The Reform group of Jews in Chattanooga were based and started originally by the Jewish immigrants from Germany in 1848, more or less that time, including Adolf Ox, the founder, the real head of the New York Times, and his family. Now, Adolf Ox, these are intro. I don't know whether you want this kind of information.
Sure.
The kind of things I grew up in. Adolf Ox married the daughter of Wise, the founder of the Reform movement from Cincinnati, in the Reform Jewish movement in this church, in this school, or whatever you want, which is the most outgoing away from all the Jewish things. And these German Jews were looked down upon, the people who were Jews from Russia or Lithuania or whatnot. So I was here, I was a real bastard type of thing. My mother believed in their principles, but not in their ideas. They were against Zionism. They were against the idea of Jews were just a religious people and had nothing to do with race or background or anything else. My mother believed differently. My mother believed the Jews were a special people that had a tradition that went on. She believed in Zionism. She believed in the idea of Israel. But she believed that the Orthodox rigidity was not a thing for them. So I grew up in all of these things and had a chance to make a choice.
This was quite a good background to going to Baylor then.
Well, it was, because we were screwballs. It was different. We didn't fit. We didn't fit in anything.
Where, was it at Baylor that your scientific interests began to come
out? Well, by the time I was, say, 8 years old, chemistry and experimenting, like my mother was experimenting in cooking. I loved to experiment with chemicals and things. And there was just an atmosphere, or I had it. So from the time I was, say, 8 years old, 7 years old, the first little chemistry set, chemistry was my thing. And Baylor was a school that fortunately allowed students to be themselves. And very early, with all my troubles, I was expelled from the school for raising hell and causing trouble and this and that and taken back in. Fortunately, the headmaster appreciated people being different or special or what. It wasn't long before I was even given the keys to the laboratory so I could work and play around in chemistry. So while I was a troublemaker and expelled in the early days, and I ended up, I was a good, but I realized that you might as well get good grades if you want to get into college. So I began to work and do. But it was a great school with a great liberal tradition. I don't think the people there knew that they had such a liberal tradition, but they did. They didn't quite understand what they were doing, but they were that way. I could never have gotten in. If I had gone to the public school of Chattanooga, Tennessee, I would never have been able to have gotten into a college like MIT, direct from prep school. I couldn't have passed the exams. I wouldn't have been able to do anything.
Was there any particular member of the faculty at Baylor who stands out?
The outstanding guy was at that time the headmaster, who was a young man who later became by the name of Alex Gary. His father was a famous Southern bishop of the Episcopal Church of the South, came from a good family. He eventually moved to the president of University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, and then was the head of the university, whatever you call it, chancellor or president of the University of the South of Sewanee. He died as a young man, but he was a man of vision and took a particularly like. He used to beat my ass for being bad, but kept me going. I don't know whether you want this recorded, but that's true.
Can always be edited.
Huh?
Can always be edited.
Of course, but this is the truth. You get the flavor of what I'm trying to tell you.
No, that's important. Do you recall the books that you read when you began to be interested in chemistry?
Well, in the early days, I read all kinds. Look, I was interested in all sorts of books. I was a book guy. At the time I was 3 years old, I used to go to the public library. I loved to read, and I read things way beyond everything. I was interested in geography, history, everything under the sun. As far as chemistry is concerned, of course, I began to read these early popular books on chemistry. I forget the name, but of course, Slosson's History of,
Creative Chemistry?
All that kind of stuff as a young man. I was thrilled with the whole viewpoint of doing. And I just knew when I was about 13 or 14 that I would win the Nobel Prize someday for chemistry.
and how did MIT come into the picture?
Well, I went to MIT. Nobody in my... You see, the idea of being a scientist was not the typical thing in a prep school. Mm-hmm. And certainly my family or friends didn't know what the hell I'm talking about or what. And MIT was my interest because I was told by, I don't know, whether I read or somebody at the school told me that that was the best technical school. At that time I was thinking of chemical engineering. I didn't distinguish between chemistry and chemical engineering, but I was thinking of chemistry in terms of useful things, not in terms of just the theoretical things. So they said, oh, that's a great school, that's the hardest school and the best. So I said, that's where I'll go. So nobody at the school knew anything. I wrote off the catalog, wrote off for everything myself. I was incidentally, I was 15 years old as a senior at the school. And I found out in those days you had to take like 15 exams and everything to get in, all the college boards and all the required courses, math and languages and all that. And when I graduated, I found out, at the time I was graduating, I found out that you had to have either 3 years of German or 3 years of French or 2 years of French and 2 years of German. And I had 2 years of Spanish, 2 years of French, a year of German, 2 years of Latin, but nothing quite the thing. So I didn't have the entrance, but I said, well, I'll take the 3-year college board exam. I found out that you had to have both physics or chemistry. I had chemistry, but not physics. So what I did when I graduated, I took 2 weeks with the professor of physics at the summer school, like for 2 weeks. I read the book, did the experiments, and then went and took the exam for physics and passed physics exam for a year after 2 weeks study. So I passed these damn exams. And in those days, if you passed the exam, they didn't argue whether you really took the courses or not. So that's how I entered the college.
What did your classmates at Baylor do?
Huh?
Where did your classmates go on after prep school?
They went to schools like mainly Southern colleges. The highest standing college in the normal sense of my fellow things was like Vanderbilt, but they didn't go to any of them. They didn't go to Martin Scott. In those days, there were not too many people at NYT from the South, you know, scattered this state and that state. There weren't a bunch. It's a different world.
What did your parents make of that?
That's where you want to go. That's what you want. They don't know. What do they know from that? Here I am in Tennessee. They've never been to Boston, but they never knew. I was 15 when I started as a senior. When I graduated, I'd just become 16. And the entrance to MIT, you're supposed to be 17. So I wrote something that I put down 17, and I was 17.
You said you were the firstborn, Sydney.
What?
You said you were the firstborn. Did you have brothers or sisters?
I had a sister, of course, many cousins. I mean, there were many. After all, my father had brothers, and they had children. My mother had brothers and sisters, and they had children. I was the firstborn on all these two families. But I was a troublemaker. Trouble always causes something wrong.
Going to this strange
place. Oh, interesting thing. You like some color. And my senior year at Baylor, it's just Baylor, since I had the keys to the laboratory and I was a prize chemical student, it came time for the spring holidays and I decided I'd make some fireworks to celebrate. So I took a couple of boys down with me to the laboratory and prepared some fireworks. What I thought would be fireworks, and it blew up just when I was mixing them together. And it blew the windows out, blew the whole part of the building up in the school. I was knocked out. A couple of other boys were. We were brought to the hospital bleeding, burnt from head to toe. We were big heroes. We were in the hospital, the local hospital. Chattanooga, famous, I'm still famous, the guy that blew up the laboratory building. Even after all these years. And I graduated the school in 1928 and entered MIT in the fall of 1928. Is that enough information at the point?
That's good. Let's go to MIT.
All right. MIT, I went long about the train to get there. I never even seen pictures of the place. It was big, all these buildings on the river. It was all very exciting and very wonderful to me. And young and strange, but I came in early to take a course in trigonometry, which I felt I needed. I wasn't too good at it. I just took one up to MIT a couple of months ahead of time, took a summer course in trigonometry, lived in the dormitory, sort of lonesome there, you know, I didn't know what the hell was going on. And lived in dormitories for a month or two. I joined the fraternity in my freshman year and moved into the fraternity house, which I liked because I was with people. I felt that I wasn't alone so much. Big disappointment at MIT was that nobody in the school really gave a damn, seemed to give a care about you. And while I was a smart boy at Baylor, I found I was surrounded by a lot of other smart boys. And the work was very, very hard, a lot to work, and I wanted to play around a little bit and kid, and it was very difficult. And I got by the first year, but of course I went out raising hell, always tired, couldn't get up in the morning, all the problems. You want any human things? I don't know.
Just a second, let me turn this over.